Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Steve Moore joins us about a pretty incredible survey that we want to talk about and to highlight. We also have John Rich talk about the RNC and Old Glory Bank. Did Ron DeSantis run the worst campaign in history? And something smells in Davos. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. And get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Joining us now is John Rich. Several topics I want to cover. John, thank you so much for joining the program. I want to start with this story. You're involved in Old Glory Bank, along with Ben Carson and many others. A lot of people are calling me about it, doing a great job. Talk about this story about how the feds asked the banks to search private transactions for terms like MAGA and Trump. Your thoughts, John Rich.
If you would have told us 2 or 3 years ago that banks would be combing through your personal commentary and what stores you're shopping at, you would have been called a conspiracy theorist. That's nothing but hyperbole. Oh, come on, go back in the basement, put on your tinfoil hat. However, 2 or 3 years ago, Ben Carson, myself, Larry Elder, and several other people were talking about this, especially after watching what Justin Trudeau did to the truckers in Canada when he froze all their bank accounts to break up their protest. We said, listen, this is going to come to America. Whether they freeze your bank accounts or not, they're going to kowtow to the federal government. They're going to turn all your information over. They're going to turn you in and they're going to play ball with the feds. So we got to build a new situation that people can move their money to where that will not happen. So Old Glory Bank was formed for that exact reason. And it's a hill people can run to. I tell people all the time, Charlie, we feel like we want to run for the hills. But what hill are you going to run to, man? The enemy has bought all the hills. We have to build new ones for people to go to. So the basic premise behind Old Glory Bank is you will never be penalized for exercising your constitutional rights at Old Glory Bank.
No, I love it. And I mean, just everyone knows the federal government is flagging transactions. Of course, the House Republicans are doing nothing to stop it. But they flag bank transaction search terms of Trump, MAGA, Cabela's, Bass Pro Shops. And talk about the war via banking. This is very, very scary. If they're able to take over the financial instrumentation of a society, they basically control us.
That's exactly right. So a lot of people are under the misconception that if the federal government calls a bank, aka Bank of America, and they say, hey, Bank of America, I want to know where Charlie Kirk has been shopping. We want to know what words Charlie Kirk has been saying when he's shopping or what brands is he buying. That bank, Bank of America, then has two choices. They can do what the government says, which is what they just did, and most all of them will. Or that bank can say, you know what, we'll see you in court. Take two of these and call me in the morning, if you know what I mean. We're not going to play this game. We'll see you in court because our customer hasn't committed any crimes. We're not turning that information over to you. But all these banks are hand in hand with the federal government. Old Glory Bank was designed to be a bank that would say, now we'll see you in court. Charlie Kirk's business is none of your business.
So I want to kind of touch on another story here, John, and there's a lot going on, but I want to go to this CBDC and how Trump will block it. Let's play cut 143, please.
So we talked about a number of issues backstage, which I've actually championed in this race that I do think would be beneficial to the America First movement for President Trump to take on. And I think he was very amenable to many of them. opposition to a central bank digital currency.
And tonight I'm also making another promise to protect Americans from government tyranny. As your president, I will never allow the creation of a central bank digital currency. You know about that?
So, John, why is this important, the consolidation of financial power?
Well, the central bank, as we all know, controls the world, basically our financial system. So if they can ever come with a digital currency like that, then forget it. I mean, welcome to China. Welcome to the USSA. That's what that will be. And so for Trump to step forward, the only candidate I've heard step forward and say, I will not allow that to happen to our country, might be the biggest thing, in my opinion, that he's ever said to this point. Because if they're ever able to pull that off, a digital currency like that, it's game over for all of us. You know that. I know that. The general public is starting to learn about that. Even Joe Rogan has talked about that. Man, we cannot let that happen. So here's Trump. Who are you going to vote for? You know, what's really facing America? What level of threat are we actually under? When you start talking about the central bank and what they want to do, that is a game over scenario. So I was really, really happy to hear Trump bring that up.
The other thing I want to highlight with you, John, and I know you and I share this because we have to win this November, right? That's what it's all about. It's about building coalitions to win in November. You have been critical of the current RNC regime, Ronna McRomney. We have an alternative RNC meeting that we are doing coming up about in a week and a half from now. Can you talk about the RNC? And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. We can win in spite of the RNC. But if we don't win, it will be because of the RNC. Your thoughts, John Rich?
Well, this last time when Ronna was up for the vote and Harmeet went out and challenged her, I actually went to California with Carrie Lake. Carrie and I flew all the way out there and we had meetings on the side in little rooms at the hotel talking to these guys and gals that were going to be voting. And we said, listen, if you keep her in there after what we've learned about how she spends this money and how she shafts certain opponents like Trump, we're never going to send you another dime. Well, guess what? They put her back in anyway, and that's an anonymous vote, so nobody knows who voted which way. So they call it the uniparty for a reason, Charlie, because it's a real thing. Two wings of the same bird, as it's been described, and that is absolutely true. I think Trump can win despite them, but man, what a comment that the RNC is refusing to get behind Donald Trump. Not only that, if you've got 30 more seconds, when I really understood the RNC is when they were running ads after the last election and they were running ads saying, we're fighting for Trump, we're fighting for Trump, send in your money. And this was when the whole election was being debated. Was it a fair election or not? My own grandmother sent in $50 from her Social Security check to the RNC because they said they were fighting for Trump, only to find out that they had been telling Trump's attorneys to cease and desist, sit out and shut up. You're running the future of the Republican Party. Okay, so they're a bunch of scoundrels, and they need to replace their leadership with somebody that can push ahead in a legitimate way that speaks and moves like the constituents do.
John Rich, in closing here, what is the call to action then? If the RNC is not going to do it, we're trying to do it at Turning Point Action. We're building a ballot-chasing army. What can the grassroots do? What can we do to consolidate to try to get the necessary work accomplished ahead of November?
Well, Charlie, I think what you're doing with Turning Point needs to happen. I mean, you can replace what the RNC has done all these years when they were doing it the right way by exactly what you're doing. If you want to donate money, don't send it to the RNC. Support Turning Point, support other organizations, even locally in your area that are out doing the real ground game to get the right people elected in office. We've got such important things ahead of us. You talked about that central bank deal. Thank God for Donald Trump. Thank God he is out there willing to stand in the way of this massive machine that's looking to crush every last one of us. And guys like you and guys like me, we're doing what we can too. It's going to take all of us to win this thing.
John, you're a great American. You were excellent at AmericaFest, AmFest.com. John, thank you so much. We're in full agreement. You are a true patriot. And everyone check out Old Glory Bank. We're going to be doing more stuff with them moving forward. John, thanks so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
John is a legend. For those of you that don't follow country music, he is a country music legend. And what a great patriot. Speaking up, speaking out. Big and Rich is his whole deal. They were there at AmericaFest. They were really, really great. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Mike Lindell and MyPillow employees want to thank my listeners for all your continued support. To thank you, they're having an overstock clearance sale right now for the best prices ever when you use promo code Kirk and you get free shipping on your entire order. Get 50% off the MyPillow 2.0 and the brand new flannel sheets that just arrived and won't last long. Get six-pack towel sets for only $29.98 and take advantage of the free shipping on larger items like mattresses and mattress toppers. The 100% made in USA on sale for as low as $99.99. Everything is on sale from the brand new kitchen towels that have the same technology as the bath towels that actually absorb dog beds, blankets, couch pillows, and so much more. To get the best specials ever, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code Kirk and get free shipping on your entire order. So call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. I think so highly of Mike Lindell. He's a great patriot. He's a terrific person. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Now, it's not over, but I mean, it's over for DeSantis. I want to be clear. Before I do this segment, I have to separate his extraordinary record as governor, of which I have been so clear. I get nasty emails all the time. He's America's greatest governor and remains that. Well, he was when he was actually being a governor, not going to all 99 counties in Iowa, which how that helps you be governor of Florida and then you still lose by 30 is beyond me. And then his laughingstock, awful, historically terrible presidential campaign. Now, I've been doing this for 11 years, and the one thing I have learned about presidential campaigns is that it's just as much, if not more, art than it is science. You can't overly plan the stuff. You can't centrally plan it. You can have some guiding principles that should not move and should not change, but when you try to overly script things and you try to centrally plan elections, it does not go well. Whenever someone tells you that we have a plan, we've kind of built this out over the 6 or 9 months, they're almost always going to lose. Politics is as much about spirit and enthusiasm and vibe. And Donald Trump, to his credit, is the best at that. He's almost all art. And his team, not as much, at least in 2016, was not as much science. This time, the Trump campaign team, by the way, the inverse of this, I might write this article, which is the disciplined 10 out of 10 Trump campaign that Susie Wiles and that team did. And if you know the backstory there, Susie Wiles, campaign manager for Donald Trump, who's great. I really like her. We work together well with her. She really got burned by DeSantis. You can look that up. That story was a couple years ago. So Susie had an extra incentive to go after DeSantis. Politico.com, the DeSantis team ran the worst campaign in history. Now, to be fair, I don't know if that's totally true, but when you think about it, $130 million, they frame it rather persuasively. I know this guy. His name is Alex Castellanos. He's a very moderate Jeb Bush guy, but he's super smart, actually, and he was always really good to me about a decade ago, and he does not like DeSantis. Okay, so just so we're clear, this article is a lot of pent-up Florida rage. Castellanos is a Miami-based guy, and he was probably just been wanting to write this article for quite some time, probably because DeSantis kicked out the Bush people out of a lot of stuff. So you just got to take this with a little bit of a grain of salt. Start with an indisputable fact, Castellanos writes. At the beginning of 2023, Governor DeSantis was in first place ahead of former President Donald Trump, then acknowledged that DeSantis' campaign and super PAC raised more money than any other campaign. Many in the GOP billionaire class gush over DeSantis, promising to spend whatever it would take to vanish the former president. What could possibly go wrong? Well, everything. This article is extraordinary, and it goes through, and let me just tell you from our personal perspective what we saw. We have always been Team Trump, but at the same time, I wanted a spirited primary, I wanted an exciting primary, and I wanted DeSantis to be the best version of himself, because I really, truly believe what DeSantis did in Florida could be a model for the rest of the country, especially other governors. And I also think that iron sharpens iron. That's a Bible verse. And that a good primary would make both DeSantis and Trump stronger. I believe that completely. And I'm just still fascinated at how awful of a presidential campaign and candidate he was. And the point, more than anything else, and I don't want to say any names, but producer Andrew will attest to this. There was an inflection point. There was one moment where Andrew and I looked at each other. We said, he doesn't have what it takes. His team are a bunch of arrogant snobs, and he will lose and go down in the dustbin as a laughingstock in history. And it wasn't the Turning Point Action Conference that he decided to snub. It was one moment of one day where Andrew and I ranted at each other on the phone. And it's when Ron DeSantis was asked a question about Donald Trump's indictment with Alvin Bragg in New York. And he said, I don't know. I don't want to comment on paying porn stars or whatever. It was so tone deaf. It was so smug. It was so elitist. And everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. What was telling is how his team told us to pound sand. We called them and said, guys, you're so far off. Do not do this. The base is angry because Alvin Bragg is being deployed on a local level on a bad indictment to indict, you know, to go after a former president. You don't know what you're doing. And the team was so, so convinced that we were wrong. They're like, we know what we're doing. We're a bunch of experts. Stop it, Andrew. Stop it, Charlie. We're in charge. And Andrew and I called each other. We said, this guy is going down. If he can't take advice, if his team snobbishly and arrogantly kind of tells us to brush off, vaya con Dios, Team DeSantis, because you're going to need it. All right, I want to tell you about Herzog. Herzog Foundation is amazing. I want you guys to check it out right now. We've been talking about how our nation's public schools have been captured by progressive ideologues teaching things that directly contradict the values of millions of American families. For those of you worried about the best educational path for your kids and grandkids, I'm pleased to announce our new partnership with the folks at the Herzog Foundation. They are the trusted source of American K-12 private education with a remarkable suite of resources for parents and grandparents. From their online publication, The Lion, to the new podcast, Making the Leap, Herzog Foundation offers a wide range of advice and information for Christian parents. To learn more about how your family and faith and community can flourish through a quality Christian education, go to HerzogFoundation.com. That is HerzogFoundation.com. HerzogFoundation.com. H-E-R-Z-O-G. HerzogFoundation.com. Joining us now is Steve Moore, one of my favorite guests. He's an amazing guy and really cares about the country and does a wonderful job. And he has a new survey to share with us. Steve, welcome back to the program. Tell us about your survey.
Hey, Charlie, great to be with you. Thanks for having me on. So we just came out with this this morning. So this is a kind of first look at these analysis of American opinion. And what we basically, the framework of this is we looked at how ordinary, average, Main Street Americans view America and how the kind of cultural elite, the people who went to Ivy League schools. By the way, I don't think you went to an Ivy League school, Charlie, did you?
I did not go to an Ivy League school. No, whatever the opposite of an Ivy League school is, that's where I went.
Exactly.
I went to Wheeling High School.
This was people went to Ivy League schools, people who have a graduate degree, people who live in, you know, New York City or Washington, D.C. or Silicon Valley in these kind of urban areas, and people who are in the top 1 or 2% of income. And what we found, we call these people the cultural elite. And what we found is that these people are completely out of touch with ordinary Americans. So let me give you a couple of examples. If you ask ordinary Americans how are your finances doing, most Americans are saying not very well. You know, about, you know, 60, 70% say things are not going well for them financially. But for these super elite, they're 70 to 80% say they're doing really well. So they have a totally disconnect with what's happening with the kitchen table issues for most Americans, which is why people like, Paul Krugman of the New York Times and people like Joe Biden and others say, gee, why are people so angry? Everything's going so well for the country. Well, no, you're living in a bubble. And then here's another one that I found fascinating. We asked all Americans, do you think that there's too much freedom in America or too much government control? Well, the majority of normal Americans say there's way too much government control. But guess what? You're not going to believe this, Charlie. Half of these elite Americans, they say there's too much freedom in America. Too much freedom.
Wow. That's half?
Well, like 48% or something like that. So just slightly under half. I'll give you another one. If you ask Americans, do you think we should ban gas stoves? You know, that's one of the left's big things. So only about, I'm even surprised it's this high, only about 30% of Americans say we should ban gas stoves. But It's like 70% of these elite think we should get rid of gas stoves. They also want to get rid of air travel that's non-essential. They want to get rid of gas cars. They want to get rid of SUVs. These people are so out of touch with the kind of concerns and the anxieties of average Americans. And it explains a lot, I think, about why Trump is so popular, because he represents the average Main Street American, whereas Joe Biden represents these top elite 1%. Incidentally, of those people in that group that we were looking at, the cultural elites, 80% of them say they support Biden.
80%. So 80% of the people that would be in the cultural elite think that the Joe Biden administration and presidency is the path forward. And so let's talk this from an economic perspective, Steve. This is something you've been talking about. As we enter this era of cheap money, and this is such a timely segment. It's so timely because as we're here right now, Steve, on air, the S&P 500 has hit an all-time high. All-time high. The S&P 500 has never been higher as you and I are talking right now. What is that a reflection of?
Well, first of all, it is at an all-time high in numerical number, but if you adjust for inflation, the S&P 500 was actually higher under Trump than it is now. I mean, one of the reasons the S&P went up is because prices went up so much. But look, we do have a bull market right now. There's no question about it. But you know, and by the way, I think every American should be invested in the stock market. That's how you get rich, is to be. But the problem is that the wages and salaries of average, middle class, blue collar workers, those are not keeping up with inflation. And the good news is inflation is down. But still, the average American family has lost about, ready for this, $2,000 in purchasing power in real terms since Biden came into office. I looked up these numbers and actually just presented them to President Trump a few weeks ago. So I'll tell you what I showed him. The average American, you know how much incomes were up under Trump after inflation?
I don't know the exact number.
$6,400. That's gigantic, Charlie. That's a huge gain in 4 years, $6,400 increase, whereas the average family has lost $2,000 to $2,500 under Biden. So, my feeling is if Trump just looks into that camera when he debates Biden, if Biden is their nominee, and I'm doubtful that's going to be the case, but if he is, you just ask the American people, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And most people are going to say, hell no, I'm not.
Yeah. And I mean, just to expound on that even further, Steve, what your survey shows, the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, is that the numbers and the disconnect is reaching a place of, it's not spinnable. If some of these numbers were closer together, a well-tailored persuasive advertising campaign could maybe convince some people in the moderates, these numbers are so dramatic. People are suffering so much financially. No amount of propaganda can move these numbers. Reality will triumph over propaganda.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'll give you another. Some of these results were just, I thought there would be a gap between the rich cultural elite and the rest of the country, but I didn't think it would be this big. So here's another one about the issue of, I mentioned the one about what should be banned. How much are you willing to pay for climate change? Well, most Americans, if you ask them, are you concerned about climate change? They'll say, yeah, sure, I'm concerned about it. But, they realize they have other issues that are a lot more important than what the planet's going to be like 100 years from now. And yet, so you've asked people, how much are you willing to pay to deal with climate change? The average number was about $50 a year. But for the elite, they say, most of them say over $5,000, and a lot of them say, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes. This is a cultural elite issue, climate change. Just the same thing with LGBTQ issues. You think the average guy on Main Street thinks a lot about that issue? No, they're thinking about, how do I put food on the table? How do I make sure that my kids don't get mugged on the street?
Yes.
How do I deal with all the illegal immigrants?
Yes.
These are not issues that penetrate for these elite because they're separated from it.
They are separate. That is the perfect description. And so let me ask you, it's fascinating to me if there is any move, if that will ever change, because in some ways you want the elites to care about the middle class not doing well. It doesn't seem as if there's any concern. They're insulated. And dare I say, there is a little bit of a contempt. There is, I don't care.
Yes.
And Can you riff on that, Steve, please?
Yeah, it's you use the word contempt. I use the word arrogance, but yes. We're talking about the same thing. And, you know, the reason Trump won in 2016, I really believe, because I worked on that campaign, was Americans are onto this. They understand that the cultural elite are arrogant, that they thumb their nose at, you know, Main Street, middle class, patriotic Americans. And the game is up on these people. But, you know, I was only half joking. You know, I've known you for a long time, so I know you didn't go to an Ivy League school.
No, of course.
But the reason I mentioned that was because we also did a separate survey, you know, with the same questions of people who graduated from these elite universities. Charlie, those people are completely crazy. I mean, 80% of them say we should ban all this stuff. Most of them say there's too much freedom in America. Most of them would get rid of gas cars, and they would get rid of they want to get rid of non-essential air travel. Can you believe this? They say that we should ban non-essential air travel. Does that mean a family can't take their kid to Disney World? I mean, what is this?
No, the central planning and the lust for widespread totalitarianism, that's really where this ends up. So Steve, in closing here, the president thinks really highly of you. What is your advice based on this survey? How President Trump, if he's going to be the nominee, which it looks like he will be based on every indicator, how should he take this data and run on it successfully in 2024?
He should basically say, I represent middle America. I represent the people who are working 40, 50 hours a week. I don't represent the people who went to the elite Ivy League schools or the people who, you know, live in these kind of bubble cities like Washington, D.C. and Silicon Valley and Wall Street that are so disconnected from the anxieties and the fears and the concerns of mainstream Americans. That's how he won in 2016. And I believe that's how he will win again in 2024.
I totally agree. The bad guys are always trying to divide based on race or gender or class. And it's less about class because you demonstrate a little bit, but it's ideology that's actually the true divider, isn't it, Steve? It is if you believe in this cult of abstractions, that you believe in banning non-essential air travel and gas stoves and getting rid of fossil fuels, you have something deeply wrong with you. And the election should be a referendum against you.
Yeah. And I'll give you one last example out of, you know, in parting. So we asked people, who do you think should be more in charge of the schools in America? Should it be parents or should it be the education establishment, you know, the teachers unions, basically? And the most Americans say it should be parents who should be really kind of in charge of the schools. But the elite, you know, 70% of them say, no, it should be the education blob. It should be the teachers unions. And that's why the schools are so bad. And by the way, I will bet, I don't have the data on this, I'll bet these cultural elite don't even send their kids to the public schools that stink so much.
Unbelievable. Steve, you're doing great work. Keep it up. Last time I saw you was at Mar-a-Lago. You were about to meet with President Trump, and you had this beautiful thing you gave me, by the way. I read it afterwards. It was this incredible packet. I loved it. And you said, look how much wealthier people were under Trump. I said, so keep that up. The president really respects you. Steve, thanks so much.
And right back to you, Charlie. And again, I'm so glad you didn't go to Harvard.
Trust me, that's
why you're so level-headed.
Well, thank you. I am grateful, and like you wouldn't believe. Two Chicagoans riff about the country. That we got to have you back on for Chicago stuff later, Steve. God bless you. Thanks so much. There's something I don't like. It smells. It smells. So you have the hookers and blow convention in Davos, Switzerland, of the world elite and CEOs that take their private jets to the mountains where they're around a bunch of degenerates and nonsense. And a narrative is popping out of Davos. I don't like it. I don't like it. It smells. And I don't quite know what it means. And I would love your theories. This is where I'm going to ask you guys, freedom@charliekirk.com, to send in your thoughts, your theories. There's a narrative. Steve Schwartzman, who runs Blackstone, not BlackRock, Blackstone, similar but different, not nearly as bad, not even close. He said this. Alexander Soros comes out and he says, it's basically the consensus out of Davos. It's the consensus that Donald Trump's going to become president. This is cut 135 of Steve Schwartzman, who runs Blackstone. Again, it's different than Larry Fink. So just want to make sure that you understand there's two different companies. There's BlackRock and Blackstone. Play cut 135.
Now got $2 trillion deficits with no end in sight. We've got our debt to GDP going up. We've got open borders with 8 million people coming over. I don't know that the country, frankly, is prepared for four more years of that, because those things all poll very negatively. So I can't really project, you know, what would happen.
Now, Steve Schwarzman is a Republican. To his credit, he is one of the largest Republican donors, more to the Senate Republican side, but he's not a Democrat. But he's saying that. Jamie Dimon says that. And then Alexander Soros, who is a wicked individual. I feel that part of my life is going to be a multi-decade struggle against Alexander Soros. I just feel as if that's how the teams are kind of bubbling up, and I'm just going to be battling this rascal for the next 30 or 40 years. It just feels that way. This guy's going to have a $20 billion war chest. He's more political than his father. He's more ideological in some ways than his father. So Alexander Soros comes out and he says, quote, Trump win is a done deal for the Davos elite. That's what he says. And by, do we have Alexander Soros cut? It's illuminating. This smells to high heaven, everybody. So we go from that he's the biggest threat to democracy to we need Nikki Haley to joking about his assassination to now he does well in Iowa, and overnight at the Hookers and Blow convention, they're all saying that it's a certainty that Donald Trump is going to become president. Sucking up to Trump, that was Jamie Dimon's whole thing. And I think a lot of people missed the Jamie Dimon thing. It was 100% a suck-up strategy. That's what that whole thing was about. To Alexander Soros saying it's a done deal, the cake is baked, it is over. I want to hear from you, freedom@charliekirk.com. What is going on here? The best takeaway that I have for all of us is we need to work even harder. I inherently wish they were saying that Donald Trump had no chance. I actually would feel more comfortable if Alexander Soros came out and he said, yeah, we're going to defeat Donald Trump. Don't worry. I actually would be more used to that. So there's one of two explanations: that they think that there is this inevitable correction event happening in November and there's nothing they can do about it, or that they're playing with us and taunting with us. And the best explanation I have, again, this is a guess. It is a guess. And when I'm guessing, I'll tell you guys, is that they're trying to wake up their side, that they're trying to scare the activists, scare the donors, and that this may or may not be true, that in reality it's a 50-50 shot, that this is a wake-up call. In fact, I spoke like this in the summer of 2020 when I felt that a lot of people, before COVID, I'm sorry, in the winter of 2020, right before COVID, I was like, hey guys, I don't know if we're going to win re-election. I was like the only one that was going to say that. So I've done this before as a way, I believed it, to wake people up and to be contrarian, but something smells when all of a sudden the consensus at the World Economic Forum in Davos is that Trump is going to be president. Does not feel right. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.